The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Good morning. I'm Michelle Martin, and welcome to the show where we talk about all things to do with personal finance or topics that investors themselves are talking about. Today, we shine the focus on the trade deal that symbolizes how trade can deepen without the U.S. After nearly a decade of deliberation, 15 Asian nations came together on November 15th, just 3 days ago, to sign the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. Now, what does this mean for trade competition? And what are the broad benefits of RCEP that investors should be aware of? Next, there's been a big switch to traditionally unloved stocks. The good vaccine news has sparked quite a shakeup in the stock market. You've heard the term rotation used so often. Should you make the switch to stocks that were left behind because of the pandemic? Then we look ahead to Biden's first 100 days, traditionally a good time for value stocks versus growth stocks. And finally, we'll end with a look at green shoots or sectors or companies that are seeing some signs of revival with COVID-19 cases under control here in Singapore. My guest speaker weighs in on all our questions today. Time to welcome Wilfred Lim. He's Executive Director with BMFA Wealth Management. How are you? Good morning.
Hi, morning, Michelle. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Always great to speak with you. All right, let's start with RCEP, which is easily the world's largest trade agreement. It includes 20 chapters of rules. They cover trade in goods, e-commerce, investment, government procurement, intellectual property. It's a long list. Broadly, the goal is to increase rules-based economic interaction amongst the members. But goods tariffs are not high in this region, and many Asian economies already have existing bilateral free trade agreements in place already. So, Wilfred, help us understand how RCEP could make ASEAN an attractive investor destination. Do you think it will?
Yes, I think overall it will, but there are some criticisms. So the full details are not out yet, but based on available information, it seems that it will complement and enhance our long-standing, you know, ASEAN free trade area that we already have since the 90s, I think. Yeah, and this also sends out a strong message from China, especially in terms of the timing and breadth of this agreement. So as you mentioned, it's been about 8 years since negotiations started. Along the way, Trump has pulled the U.S. out of the TPP back in 2017. And it also includes countries like South Korea, Japan, and Australia, which in recent times, you know, have come into some friction with China. So for them to put that aside and include them in this agreement, I think that sends a strong message, right? So this is definitely a welcome development for Asia and ASEAN. In light of what's happening with COVID and Trump pushing the world towards deglobalization. Yeah, but however, there are some analysts that think that the deal is likely only to benefit China, Japan, and Korea more than the other states. You know, but we'll have to see, because these agreements, it took 8 years to materialize. It took 8 years to, you know, get it out there, but it will take another few more years to materialize any benefits. So it's anyone's guess at this point in time. Yeah, but the message overall is a strong one coming out from Asia.
And do we think that China, Japan, South Korea are going to benefit, because these are countries that don't have bilateral FTAs with each other?
Yeah, I guess so. So, you know, it's something new, not building on existing agreements that we have within ASEAN. But if we were to look into ASEAN itself, well, for Singapore, we'll definitely benefit from this, because we are very heavily reliant on trade and tourism. You know, so China itself makes up 16% of our exports. Yeah, but one ASEAN country that particularly stands out to me is Vietnam. So based on many factors, the three of them that I thought is worth mentioning is their proximity to China. They have a lot of existing, you know, infrastructure between the two countries already. And with rising labor costs in China, there are many industries that are moving their production and manufacturing operations out of China into Vietnam. And also, interestingly, they have a very young demographic. You know, we've been hearing throughout the world that we're facing an aging population, not only in Japan, but even in Singapore. But for Vietnam, they have 70% of their population that's actually below 35 years old.
Right.
And a very high percentage, 76% of participation in the labor force. You compare this to Europe, they only have about 56% participation. Yeah, and lastly, they are in an emerging market sweet spot, I would say, you know, because a lot of emerging markets, they are too backwards, I would say, in terms of infrastructure and government support. But Vietnam is just starting to, in the past few years, getting the government, or the government is getting behind support for foreign investments as well as infrastructure developments. So definitely a country to look out for going forward.
So in terms of emerging economies, most likely to benefit from increased investor interest, you're putting your bets on Vietnam. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, terrific. Next, let's talk about that. What investors see as a historic switch because of that positive vaccine news, value stocks have seen an incredible rebound, so to speak. There's been quite a shakeup in global equities, and investors are wondering whether they should switch in favor of those stocks that were left behind in the pandemic era, which are now soaring. So what do you make of the rotation to cheap value stocks from the trendy momentum names?
Well, I think right now the markets are going to be very fickle. We saw that after Pfizer announced the vaccine, there was a huge move into value names, and then it got sold off really quickly. Tech came back into favor shortly, and then Moderna announced, and then it's a rotation in and out, back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, so for the novice investors who are not used to this kind of volatility, I would say stick to the principles and strategies that have been working for you. Yeah, so when you consider value stocks, I think what's most important is we have to find value, right? It should not be mistaken as, you know, blindly buying beaten down stocks in the travel and entertainment sectors. I mean, if Hertz were still around, I think they're delisted already.
Mm.
Yeah, if you blindly buy into a company like Hertz that's going through cash flow problems, bankruptcy issues and all that, you may stand to lose money, even though there's a rotation into these sectors. Yeah, so the different strategies of value investing, just to name a few, I would say there's intrinsic value, you know, calculations, many different ways of calculating it. Warren Buffett has his own strategies. He's just invested into the big four pharma names recently.
Yep.
So that's something to look out for. Yeah, we also have price to book investing, where we look at companies that are below price to book of one, or at least, you know, below the historical average. I took a quick look at the Singapore banking sector. DBS is at about 1.2, while UOB and OCBC are at 0.9 price to book. So we got a question as well, why is there a difference? You know, does it mean anything? And should we just go into UOB, OCBC, just because they are in a way cheaper than DBS at this point in time? Yeah. Then we have dividend investing as well. Many attractive companies now paying dividends in excess of, you know, 4-5%. AT&T giving 7%. Philip Morris 6%. Shell at about 4.5%. So there are many ways to go about this. Investing into value stocks, I guess what's important is we need to find a suitable mix of these different factors. Yeah, and also examine why these companies are considered cheap in terms of valuations at this point in time, and how the company can weather the next few quarters of rising COVID cases. So even though a vaccine is being rolled out, I expect it to take, you know, maybe 2 or 3 quarters at least to for us to get back to normal. And that's optimistic according to the experts out there.
just terrific. So much insight there. He's our guest today is Wilfred Lim, Executive Director of BMFA Wealth Management. So still on the theme of value stocks, and there was terrific insight there into, you know, not just buying battered down stocks. If we put value stocks in historical context, on average, value stocks far outperform growth stocks in the first 100 days following a U.S. president's inauguration. So what do you expect for value stocks with a Biden presidency? What are you expecting from Biden's first 100 days? Is it meant, are you looking at it as a significant period for value stocks?
It's quite mixed, actually. If I were to bring up the three big agendas that I expect him to be addressing in his first 100 days, definitely handling of the COVID situation. I mean, right now over in the U.S., it's a mess at this point in time. So he has his work cut out for him. It's interesting to see that his new COVID advisor is saying that the next 2 months will be the most dangerous period in the U.S. There are a lot of hospitals in some states that are being pushed to their breaking points in terms of capacity. And he has also suggested an idea of a six-week lockdown to curb this rising cases. We're already seeing four states implementing new restrictions without any national guidance from Biden that's out yet. Although it will be unpopular, but if the COVID case does worsen, a nationwide lockdown may be implemented based on the advice from Biden's advisor. And we could see a very quick rotation back into, you know, your work from home names again and out of the value stocks. So I would be wary of that at this point in time. Yeah. Second thing on the agenda is the fiscal stimulus. Mm-hmm. It's been put on hold since September, I think, so a few months already due to the elections. So Biden seems to be, you know, fighting for Main Street now. So the plan is to push through the second COVID fiscal package to Main Street and small businesses. However, this may prove difficult because of the divided Senate after the elections. I'm hopeful for this. If passed, this will likely be positive not only for the value sector, I think the entire market as a whole. But something to look out for is the commodity sector, if we consider that value, because right now the markets are flooded with liquidity and cash. Mm-hmm. And if a vaccine-led recovery, you know, it will push demand back up, and we could see inflation, and this should see the commodity sector doing well in particular.
Okay. Yeah. Broadly, what is shaping your investment policy till the end of this year? I mean, we just heard news today that Masayoshi Son is sitting on about $80 billion in cash. He's expecting, more negative news ahead. This is sort of counter the narrative of positive vaccine news. What is shaping your investment policy for the rest of 2020?
Well, I'm actually quite bullish towards the end of the year, cautiously bullish. I think this phrase is overused, but, we have to be cautious. So I'm expecting a center rally going into the end of the year because there are a lot of big institutional funds that are underweight the equities market, particularly because of the election. And right now with vaccine news coming out, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. So it's not, the uncertainty is less now. So I don't foresee a big shakeup in the markets. Even if the U.S. does go into lockdown, I think it will be implemented in a controlled measure, mm-hmm. and not a blanket, you know, lockdown that will shut down the entire economy like it did in March and April.
Are you also basing this on an expectation that, you know, according to Fed Chairman Jerome Powell, interest rates are hovering near zero and they're not going up anytime soon, so that easy money is going to continue to boost asset prices in the year ahead?
Yes. To me, that's a given. It will be tough for him to raise interest rates at this point in time. I think it will only change if we start seeing inflation creeping in, at least above 2% before he changes his narrative.
Mm. All right, let's turn to Singapore. Investors still continuing to assess which portions of the economy could flourish and which may not moving forward. Are you seeing any green shoots for sectors or companies given the COVID situation seems to be under control here?
Yeah, so I'm thankful to be, you know, staying in Singapore. I do feel safe, so much so that I do tend to forget to wear my mask every now and then. I have to turn back and put on my mask again. But okay, to be honest, I'm not a fan of the Singapore stock market relative to the immense opportunities out there in the other markets, right? Mm-hmm. And only a handful of listed companies I see that are able to adopt and pivot, you know, with innovative business strategies, be it due to COVID or even before that. Yeah, so Singapore's domestic market is too small for companies to thrive. So even if we get it under control and we have zero cases in Singapore, if the rest of the world is in lockdown or struggling with their cases, it's hard for us to do well. Yeah, so but there are certain bright spots I see in Singapore. Even before the COVID situation was under control, we have the banking sector that's pretty strong. DBS in particular is holding up well. And it's interesting to see them continually innovate and digitize the entire business. We have fintech as well. iFast has been performing very well. AUAs have grown tremendously because of increase in investing activity. Tech sector, it's quite lacking in the Singapore markets. We can't really find a lot of prominent tech names in Singapore, but if I have to pick some, I think the data center REITs are quite attractive, Keppel DC in particular, as well as maybe the logistic REITs that are benefiting from the e-commerce spike this year.
Fantastic.
And lastly, for commodities, I mentioned it earlier. So Wilma is one of them that's quite positioned quite well to benefit if commodities does pick up due to inflation going forward.
All right, a treasure trove there. What do you think of aviation? You know, Bill Gates is expecting 50% of business travel to disappear in a post-COVID world. So what do you think of aviation here in Singapore?
Yes, so aviation in Singapore, if we were to look at SIA, right, they've seen a big bounce due to the vaccine news recently, but it will be tough, with the vaccine taking some time to roll out. The cases still high, and you add that on to Bill Gates saying that only 50% of business travel will come back. So if I were to look at the aviation sector, I would look at companies with some domestic business, like in China and the U.S., rather than, you know, international carriers only with no domestic business.
All right. Well, thank you so much. As always, terrific speaking with you, Wilfred.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
He's Wilfred Lim, Executive Director, BMFA Wealth Management here on Money and Me.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.